From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, May 15th, 2026. Maine State Fire Marshal Sean Essler says the Searsmont Fire Department was first to receive the call about the explosion and fire at the Robbins Lumber Mill just after 10 a.m. Friday. Most fire departments in Waldo County are staffed by volunteers, and Essler says by the time he arrived, it was a chaotic scene because of the magnitude of the fire and the number of buildings involved.
What I saw was professional firefighting efforts. I saw everybody working hand in hand to pull hose lines, to move apparatus, and to put water on the fire. I also saw members from state police, the Forest Service, a bunch of various state agencies lending a hand wherever they could.
Essler says it may be some time before an exact cause of the fire is known. The Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the Occupational Health and Safety Administration will also be investigating. Maine Health said in a statement 10 patients injured in the incident were being treated at Maine Medical Center in Portland. The Augusta School Board this week adopted a new public comment policy following a judge's order in an ongoing First Amendment lawsuit. Nicola Grisco has more.
Augusta resident Nicholas Blanchard, who goes by the nickname Corn Pop, has alleged that his First Amendment rights were violated when the school board chair repeatedly interrupted him during public comment. A federal judge ruled last month that the school board unjustly censored Blanchard and ordered the board to refrain from enforcing prohibitions on gossip and vulgar language during public comment. The board removed those references and approved new rules. And at a school board meeting this week, Superintendent Michael Tracy said he believes the new policy is responsive to the judge's order. Blanchard said he disagreed. The case is continuing to play out in federal district court. Blanchard is being represented by the Washington, D.C.-based Institute for Free Speech. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ogrisco.
And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our analysis of government and politics. I'm joined today by Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler. With less than a month before the June 9th primary election, the seven Republicans vying to become Maine's next governor are homing in on predictable issues of spending and taxes. But Steve, there's also a notable dynamic in the contest involving the presumptive frontrunner Bobby Charles and the rest of the field. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, this is really fascinating, Ari, because Charles has drawn a lot of criticism from several of the other Republican candidates for pandering to voters and overpromising on what he would do if he's elected. And this goes back to last summer, well before any polls showed him leading in the race. So this isn't just about him being out front and the rest of the field trying to knock him down, which is sort of a normal thing that would happen in a race like this. In fact, some of the candidates were reluctant to say that they'd support him even if he becomes the nominee during a debate hosted by WGME and the Bangor Daily News. Let's give it a listen.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I'm running to be the nominee.
Jonathan?
I'm running to be the nominee. I feel good about a lot of the candidates on this stage, by the way. I do.
So the first voice you heard there was Garrett Mason, the former state senator, making his second run for governor. The second was Jonathan Bush. And what's notable is that Charles wasn't on the stage. He had skipped the debate.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Charles has also declined to appear in a couple other debates. What's that about?
Well, he's offered a bunch of reasons for not appearing in some of these. It's also possible that he just thinks that he's running away with the nomination and maybe doesn't think it's worth the risk to participate in a debate, although he did participate in one hosted by New Center Maine this week. Nonetheless, his absence has irked some of his rivals, including Mason, who took a shot at him during the WMTW debate a couple of weeks ago.
Do you guys wonder where Bobby is on all these things?
Just curious.
Yes. I don't know. You know, it's hard to know.
We can tell you he is not here with us this evening to answer those questions.
Wish he was here to answer some questions, but I think he might be in bed.
In addition to this, there's been a remarkable development in this race that involves Maine's ranked choice voting system, which allows voters to rank candidates in order of preference rather than just picking just one. Republicans have long opposed ranked choice voting, but what we're seeing now is some of the gubernatorial candidates are reluctantly embracing it this year.
And perhaps less surprisingly, we're also seeing that from some of the Democratic gubernatorial candidates, too, right?
That's right. You know, in that race, there's been a lot of polling that suggests that Nirav Shah, the former Maine CDC director, is leading that race. And so some of the other candidates, notably Hannah Pingree, Shenna Bellows, and Troy Jackson have basically held a couple of events where they have encouraged their supporters to rank those other two candidates on their ballots, which would help them in a runoff if Shaw ends up being the leader.
And what are the ranked choice alliances that we're seeing in the GOP primary?
Yeah, I should say that not all of the candidates are doing this. Garrett Mason, for example, has such a deep disdain for ranked choice voting that he actually issued a statement recently saying he wasn't participating in any of this. And that's consistent with what we've seen in other Republican primaries. In fact, repealing the law is a priority embedded in the main Republican Party platform. And that's what makes these alliances now so remarkable. You know, during one debate, David Jones and Ben Midgley actually announced in their opening statements that they had formed an alliance. They basically encouraged their supporters to rank the other candidate number two on their ballot. And Jonathan Bush has anointed Robert Wessels as part of his campaign, even though Wessels isn't technically dropping out, which also implies that there's a ranked choice arrangement there as well.
And what's Bobby Charles saying about all this?
Well, he's not loving it. He put out a statement blasting his opponents for, quote, backroom deals and voter manipulation. He also instructed his supporters to rank him all across the ballot, which has the same effect as just ranking him number one and leaving the other options blank.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the themes we're seeing from the GOP candidates. One of them is about state spending and welfare fraud. That was actually a focus of an event with Vice President J.D. Vance this week. What is the vice president saying?
Well, this is part of a long campaign that's been taking place for, more than a year now, targeting Medicaid fraud in particular. And then yesterday, Vice President Vance came to Bangor to serve two purposes. One was to talk about Medicaid fraud and it's what he says is a festering issue in Maine, and tried to make comparisons between Maine and Minnesota. The event also doubled as basically a rally for our former Governor Paul LePage, who's running for Congress in Maine's 2nd Congressional District. That event was interesting because it sort of ties in to some of the Republican gubernatorial candidates, making these claims that, welfare fraud is, pervasive in Maine, and that's a lot of that has to do with Democrats running state government. And so, they're running as people who will come in if elected and clean all that up.
And Steve, some of the candidates are also talking about this fraud issue in the context of cutting taxes. So what's the connection that they're trying to make there?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the candidates have made spending and tax cuts a centerpiece of their message, which isn't surprising. Republicans are always talking about cutting taxes. And in Maine, they really want to slash the income tax, or in some cases, zero it out entirely. The problem is that income taxes make up nearly half of the state's revenues. So in order to satisfy Maine's constitutional requirement for a balanced budget, you have to cut spending if you're going to cut taxes. Otherwise, the state can't pay its bills. So some of the candidates are saying that cleaning up welfare fraud is basically a pathway to help achieve that goal.
And how realistic is that?
Well, there's probably not enough fraud to make a significant dent in the income tax on its own. In fact, there's probably not enough straight spending cuts to make up for the loss of income tax revenue without basically decimating state services. And some of the candidates acknowledge this, including Garrett Mason, Ben Midgley, and David Jones. But Bobby Charles is vowing to eliminate the state income tax in just 4 years. Owen McCarthy says that it can be done in double that time. But it's worth noting here that between 2011 and 2013, Republicans had full control of state government, and they struggled to lower the income tax by just over 1%. And that was with, a tax-cutting evangelist, Paul LePage, in the governor's office.
And that was Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler. You can sign up for the Pulse newsletter by going to mainepublic.org/pulse. Maine Health Lincoln Hospital says it's evaluating birthing services. System officials say they'll hold community forums in Damariscotta and Booth Bay Harbor in June. The hospital averages roughly 120 births a year, according to a spokesperson. They say no decisions have been made regarding any changes to maternity services. Over the past 5 years, 9 maternity units have closed at Maine hospitals from Fort Kent to Belfast to York. Reproductive health providers in Maine are expressing relief that the U.S. Supreme Court has maintained access to the medication abortion drug mifepristone. The decision issued Thursday lifts a lower court stay that temporarily blocked use of the drug for telehealth patients while a lawsuit works its way through the courts. George Hill, president and CEO of Maine Family Planning, says mifepristone is just as safe when provided by telehealth, which is an especially important way for rural patients to access care. Planned Parenthood of Northern New England criticized the lawsuit as being, quote, rooted in politics, not in science or medicine. The state government today announced $3 million in PFAS fund research grants to support Maine farms impacted by PFAS. The Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry is currently working with 120 sites to provide testing, financial assistance, research, and technical support to help farmers make informed decisions and continue operating safely. Most contamination stems from the historic use of wastewater sludge as an abundant, low-cost fertilizer, a practice banned in Maine in 2022. The presence of PFAS on agricultural land raises questions about how PFAS circulate through soil, water, plants, and animals. The PFAS Fund Research Grant Program was established to help answer these questions. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.